Hey everybody, welcome back to Love People and Make Money. This is episode number 89. I am joined by a special guest, Emily Connolly from emilywriteswell.com. Hi, Emily.
Hi, I'm excited to be here today, Kelly.
I am too. I'm geeked because I already feel like I know you some, which is not usually common when I'm meeting somebody who came as someone who said, hey, I like your podcast. I'd like to be a guest. If I say yes, then the interview is often the first time that we've met. Every now and then I'll check someone out and say, hey, can we have a quick chat first? But I did something that still cracks me up with you, because you did something in your approach to be a podcast guest that I'd never seen before. So for my listeners, I get podcast pitches on the regular. Most podcasters do. And people send notes that say, hey, I love your podcast. I love what you're doing there. And I think I would be a perfect guest. And here's my one sheet. And then I would say 90% of the time I take a peek at the one sheet and it has absolutely nothing to do with the topic of this podcast. We're all about content marketing and community building here. And they'll talk about real estate or investing or some other off the wall, crazy topic. And I always think, like, really? Like you checked out my podcast and you thought it was cool and that you'd be a perfect fit? Like, I call bullshit. This is just some mass automated podcast pitch process that someone is using. Emily, you didn't do it that way. When I got your email and I took a look at your one sheet, I was blown away because the one sheet itself was actually customized for me and my podcast. Like, actually thoughtful, hey, this is what I'd like to, this is why I think I can be of service to your audience. And I just, my jaw dropped. I'm like, this never happens. So Emily, first of all, what the hell, where'd you get that idea?
I don't know. I haven't had like anyone tell me to do that. So I'm a copywriter. I write for a living. And being real, I think, is really, really important to me. There's projects I turn down because they don't feel genuine or authentic, or they feel a little slimy. Not often, but like, you know, those aren't my people. And I think that's just kind of my approach to the world too. You know, I'm not going to send you a lie. I'm not going to lie and say, you know, oh, I think I'd be a perfect fit if I haven't actually listened to the show or looked into, you know, what you're about, because I don't know, it's not worth, you know, if I was a real estate investor, it's not really worth it to get in front of your audience. Like, that's not a good fit. Cool. That's not really going to benefit me, and it's not going to benefit your people. And so I try to be pretty, you know, authentic, I guess. And when something feels like it really would genuinely be a good fit, then I like to reach out.
It was a great move. And because I was saying no to everyone.
I think you told me that. You said, I said no to everyone lately.
Because they were really the wrong audience, wrong person. Mm-hmm. But even the 10% of the time where it's like, well, they could fit, I just still wasn't motivated. I have become really jaded about doing podcast interviews, in that people are coming to the recording wanting to answer the same set of questions that they've answered on a dozen other podcasts this week. And there's no energy in it. There's no enthusiasm. And
yeah,
so
that seemed, yeah, that, I mean, it might be easy, but that sounds pretty boring. So
yeah,
I think we've worked together, or we've talked together enough to know we like to keep things real and
yes.
Not afraid of a little, you know, challenge and I don't know, an unscripted conversation.
So I responded back to you, and this, now you did something you'd never done before. I did something I'd never done before. I wrote back and said, first of all, wait a while, making the one sheet just for me. But then I asked for more than just your time for doing a podcast interview. I wrote back and said, I'd like to do two things with you if you're willing. I'd like to have you as a guest expert for my small group mastermind to talk and discuss copywriting. I'd like you to show up for two different mastermind calls. Just give me 2 hours of your life. Just show up, be smart, be part of the conversation. And then I'd like to interview you. And at the time I thought, I've never asked anyone to do this before. I don't know her. She doesn't know me. Like, what is she? I wonder what she's going to think of this crazy request. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to ask for what I want and see what happens. And I loved your response. You said, I like to over deliver.
I do. It's one of my favorites. And those were really, really great conversations. I really enjoyed both of them. We got like in the weeds with technical stuff. And then we also got kind of like bigger picture, power of words, zoomed out kind of conversation. Yep. And they were both really, I don't know, really powerful, really like fun parts of my week too.
So when I asked you to do that, were you nervous about coming?
No. Because you said just come and talk. I think I probably am more nervous when someone has a very specific thing they want me to teach, which I do a lot. You know, I guest teach and show up in mastermind groups and group programs and stuff pretty frequently. But you said just come talk to us about copy and come be part of our conversation. And so I was very excited for that.
It was great. And I'm definitely going to do that again. It was one of those things where it's like, well, that was fun. Mm-hmm. Fun for me. It was fun for my community. So just guys listening, if you're trying to get seen on other podcasts, you know, be like Emily and ask what you can do just to stand out and be unique. And then, you know, if you're like me and you have an audience to share, don't be afraid to ask for what you want, experiment, try new things, because this was really fun. So Emily, I want to talk a little bit about some of the conversations, some of the topics that came up during the mastermind. You saw how different the groups can be sometimes. Mm-hmm. The vibe of the conversation went in a completely different direction on Wednesday versus Monday. And that's one of the things I love about having a group. It's one Momentum Coaching Mastermind, but they meet on different days, you know, according to their schedule. Sometimes I have three sessions going, depending on the time of year and the number of people that are registered. And I just love that the topic changes according to who's there.
Mm-hmm.
But I took some notes of topics that we touched on, and one of the topics that captured my imagination was the topic around storytelling in copywriting and finding the sweet spot. So brevity. Storytelling on a sales page, sometimes, especially some folks, when it comes to storytelling, like they can't tell their story with like less than 1500 words is the way they feel like it. And right. 1500 words of a story added to a sales page.
Too much.
Yeah. So right. Say more about that.
Sure. So I think storytelling is probably one of my favorite ways to connect with people through copy, just because everyone loves a good story. Also, it's just emotional. So when you can build that emotional connection in a real way, I think that is really helpful. But you can write a really good story in 3 sentences. So I think the way I challenge a lot of people I work with is to get really clear before you ever pick the story you're going to tell, before you ever start writing or any of that stuff, is to do a little bit of like research or planning, right, before you start. So what is the goal of your story? Like, what emotion do you want people to feel? What are you trying to do? If it's on a sales page and you want them to feel, there's a number of things, right? Maybe you want them to feel a little nervous or a little scared, right? Maybe you made a mistake that you want your reader to connect with and say, oh, I don't want to make this mistake, so I'm going to take action. Maybe you want them to feel really excited about what they're going to do or really confident. There's any number of emotions you could be trying to evoke. And I think you have to know that before you start. So get really clear on what your goal is and what the emotion is that you want to, and then pick the part of your story. We all have, right? Beautiful, complex. We could all write a novel, probably. Each of us could write a novel or more, right? About our stories. But pick a teeny tiny little part of your story that is going to focus on building that emotion. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that story in a couple of sentences, right? We don't need the whole back thing, the whole like what led up to this. We need to know the main point that's going to drive that emotion. And then I always tell people to use detail, right? Detail is what makes like a good story. But use those details that build that emotion. So talk about if you're telling a story about when you're nervous, right? Include the emotions about like your heart racing or your face turning really hot, or, you know, you call your best friend because you're so scared and you have to talk to somebody. Don't tell us what you were wearing or what room you were in or what season it was. Like, those details don't matter, right? But the details that build that emotion are what's going to make that a good story. And that'll cut down, I think, a lot of it.
Yeah. I was just looking at my about page because I need to tweak something. Details that we include in stories, you know, when I started my business, it was 2002. I was a single mom and my business was, I ended up starting an internet radio show, Work at Home Moms Talk Radio. So I was very focused on moms, work at home moms, being a mom. And I need to edit my about page because I still use the phrase single mom within the first 2 sentences. And I, my business is no longer focused on moms, and I'm 55 and my son's grown, married, giving me grandchildren. The role of single mom no longer, you know, shapes me. Right. But when I had to write a bio for something recently, I changed that from saying I got my start as a single mom to just saying I got my start back in 2002 and at a time where I felt really limited and alone mm-hmm. in the world. Same thing, but mm-hmm. no longer pigeonholing myself because people see single mom and go, oh, I can relate to that, or oh, I can't relate to that. I need to do that with my about page. Go back, just make that little change. Because I like the vibe of saying I got started when I felt very limited and alone, like broke with no mm-hmm. support.
Right.
Because that helps people understand, oh, she gets me. She understands what it's like to start from scratch.
Exactly. And if that's the emotional connection, right, it's like figuring out what part, because that single mom part is still part of your story, right? But it's not what is the most applicable today. But really just finding those parts of your story, which can, I guess, feel a little calculated, but it really isn't. It's just being intentional. You can't share 30, 50 years of life building, right? Like, that's too much. So really focusing, on those details that connect with your audience, where they are right now, or where they want to be. You know, it can be aspirational, or it can be that pain point centered, like we shared this pain point, or, you know, how you do it is different, but yeah, picking those details that talk to your audience, really builds that connection.
Yeah. So brevity is important. How do you segue from copy to story back to copy?
So segues are really important. And I always just think of it as like, you have to build a bridge, right? So, I like to actually think about that before I start the story. And so I will plan my segue before I ever sit down and write the story. So for example, if I'm going to tell a story about a time I like didn't get what I want, right? Like I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head. Like I wanted something, but I didn't put in the work, right? So like I wanted this thing, but I didn't work for it. So I didn't get the result I wanted. I'm gonna pair that story with like the point I'm trying to make, right? So the point I'm trying to make for my audience is if you don't put in the work, you won't get this result that you want. And I'm gonna bridge those before I ever start writing. So I try to usually find like one detail. And use even like a sentence, like, so that, or so you know, just like me, mm-hmm. you may want this, or, I mean, that doesn't sound great off the cuff, but really planning that ahead of time, because what you want to avoid, right, is telling this beautiful story and then having a very separate point. So your business point, like your selling point, your business point, whatever the thing is that you're trying to do, has to connect. And I like to plan that ahead of time. So I know, okay, great. I'm going to talk about X, Y, and Z. After Z, here's exactly what I'm going to say. And then this is where I'm going. So I kind of have the two determined ahead of time. Here's my business point written out. Here's my story. And now I know how I'm going to connect those two.
Yeah.
Because yeah, nobody cares, right? Nobody cares about you like skydiving. Cool. But if me skydiving has a relevant, if it connects to what I want my audience to learn, now all of a sudden they do care.
Yeah. I'm thinking about my own copywriting. I think I often use headlines as my segue point. Like, if I've just told a story about, having been in a really difficult situation and finally taking responsibility and pulling myself up out of it. Then my next headline is, you know, are you at that point right now?
Like, oh, right. Like you're talking about on a sales page.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Like taking them from my story back into their own, like, are you there right now? Hoping they all go, yes.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I think headlines are a great way to do that. You can also just, you know, using formatting specifically in an email or on a sales page, it works both ways, you know, bolding, larger fonts, which is what a header is going to be, italicizing, somehow setting that apart. And then I like what you said about bringing it back to them, because that's the point, right? Like, if you do tell a story, especially on a sales page, you have to bring it back to the person who's buying, because that's why they're there, right?
Yeah. WIIFM, what's in it for me?
Exactly.
I love that. Every time I say that, I think about my friend, Susanna Myers. She's a wonderful entrepreneur. But I asked her to review a series of emails I was using to introduce myself to new people. I wanted to tell my story. This isn't about like sales copy on a sales page, but I wanted to tell my story, to share the over the course of several emails. This is what it was like for me when I got started. And these are some of the key moments of growth and change and progression in my business. And she read it all and she's like, it's really great. Like, I already knew this stuff about you, like, but it's missing WIIFM. you're telling your story, but you're not bringing it back to me. Mm-hmm. To like, what am I supposed to do with all that? And like, I so appreciated that feedback. And then like, how often do I forget WIIFM? Not as often since she did that. But storytelling, when someone is writing a sales page for their own products, because, and they want to share their story of overcoming, or like the person who knows how to quit sugar and lose weight, you know, here's my story of overcoming, whatever. They're so proud of what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that telling their success story is enough to motivate the person. But is it? Like, if you can't effectively bring it back to them, to the reader.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think too, like, just reading, you know, if I'm not picking up your biography and intentionally saying, I want to read about your life. If I, you know, I'm going to be a little put off if it's just your story. Like, okay, cool. Yeah. Again, right? Why not in a mean, we're just innately selfish, right? We're looking for answers. So something as simple as, you know, bringing, like, if I'm telling my story and I'm saying like, have you, you know, maybe you felt this exact way. I was addicted to sugar. Or maybe like, do you know, like I, you know, I was midnight searching through my pantry for like the last thing, the last sugary treat, like I hadn't thrown away. Like, have you been there? Or, you know, I know you've had this same thing. Even those little interjections where you're referencing back, you're connecting through telling your story, you're connecting back to the reader and saying, hey, I know you're there, right? Mm-hmm. I'm still talking to you. And helping put them in, helping put, see themselves in your story, then it can be really effective.
Yeah. Importance of design. What's your favorite tool for designing a sales page? What do you use?
So I don't really design sales pages. I work with a lot of people who work with designers, right? So they'll have a designer, they come to me for the copy.
Gotcha.
I have a, it changes for every person, but I have a rough template that I like to use that I've just created for myself in Google Docs. It's in wireframes, so it's not pretty, but it does give you a good idea of how the copy should be displayed or designed, because the design is so important, right? You can have a great, beautiful sentence, and if it's just written in 10-point font, in an ugly color that doesn't matter, right? Then no one's going to read it. So I do like use, you know, size, I use header fonts and that kind of thing in my copy to help people see. But yeah, I wish that I could design beautiful things, but I write beautiful words and I work with awesome designers who make them even better.
Yeah. But you feel that emphasis, like this needs to be larger. This needs to stand out.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's very hard. Sometimes people will have a template. Mm-hmm. I know a couple of people who sell really beautiful sales page, like sales funnel templates. Mm-hmm. And that's a great place to start if you're writing your own copy, if you're not working with, because I think just working with a designer is usually, if you're not really great at writing copy, is just not going to be enough. And so that's why I think I usually end up working with people who are doing both. They either started on their own and figured out this is much harder than I wanted it to be. I need some help. Or they're just working with a designer who is telling them, hey, you need to go, you know, work with someone who knows copy. And then we work together to put it into one beautiful, effortless sales page.
I use Thrive Architect myself. I'm just adding this to the show notes to say that this is what I recommend. When I write copy, I really prefer to design as I go. If I had to do what you're doing, and I would, you know, yeah, I would do my best to bold it, graphics. Do you like recommend, like, here's where a great image would go? Do you think that?
Yeah. So it's, yeah. So it'll be like, you know, insert mockup here, or, a table will be divided and it'll be like image here. And then I put the words in. So yes, I mean, it is very much, you have to, you can't just put a bunch of words on a page without any design. I mean, that's just not going to be very effective.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a longstanding joke in the online marketing space about, you know, the ugly sales pages sell. I would say not anymore. It was like,
people are going to read them. People just won't look at it. Yeah. I think there were people who got away with that for a while, right? Especially like the black background, white words, like very simple, pretty ugly. And yeah, people are not really, people want things to be pretty. We also, I think, you know, conflate like looking professional with being professional. So I know I've stumbled across some pretty awesome offers that I initially like clicked away from and was like, ugh, no, they don't know what they're talking about because it's so cluttered. Cluttered, I think, is a big one, right? Where it just looks like it was made in 1997 and hasn't been updated since.
Yeah. I mean, this came up when you were in my mastermind. There, one of the sales pages that we peeked at together had a very dated look.
Mm-hmm.
And those moments where I think for some people, they've been in the industry for so long that they haven't changed their tools. And it worked for them 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't maybe, and here's the funny thing about ugly sales pages. Some people will tell me, well, it's still working for me. And it's like, okay, well, I can't argue with your experience. If you have a community of people who've been seeing this from you for 10 years, then it's working for that community. But how does it play with new people?
Yeah. And how many people are you missing out? Like, maybe you think it's working for you because you've stayed, right? You're like, your business is staying very consistent, but should you be growing, right? Are you not growing? Are you not reaching new audiences? And I don't think, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive pretty. It's very simple. I think there's, you know, some basic design principles you can follow. Having enough white space is one, right? Like using images appropriately. And I think that is enough. It doesn't have to be beautiful. I mean, you know, I see some sales videos where I'm just like, oh, this is so pretty. But I do think when you see that, the visual does matter. Which is why, I mean, I really don't work with very many people who aren't working with a designer or don't have a really high-end template, because it doesn't matter how great the words are if people are not excited to read them, if they're not drawn in and immediately, like, you know, bought into your professionalism. It doesn't matter what I write because no one's going to read it. So it's not going to do anything.
Yeah. If when someone tells me, well, it's working for me, I always think, well, you're getting away with it with a community of people who already know you. And if that's what you're going for, keep doing it. I get away with a lot of shit with my community. You know, the people who know and love me, I can make offers through email and not even use a sales page.
Mm-hmm.
But listen to that. Hear what I just said. It's only working with the community. There's no opportunity then for it to be shared with someone new and have an impact that grows said community. So there, I can only do that so much.
Right.
Or my business will shrink.
Yeah. I think that's true. Absolutely. You could probably stay the same. Sure. If something's working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm super aware of that right now because, you know, we get away with things with, when you have an established business and you have an existing mailing list, we get away with things that work with that community. And so it can make me a little lazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when you're with people who trust you, right, you don't have to build that trust. And I think that's what visuals do a lot. Like design builds that this, you know, it's not a conversation you have consciously where you're like, this looks professional. Now I therefore believe this person has credentials. But I do think that happens on a subconscious level when you are unfamiliar with someone.
Yeah.
If I know you and I land on your page, I may not care what it looks like, right? Because I know you and I trust you and I know you've got the goods to back up whatever you're saying. Yeah. But if I'm a new person and it doesn't look professional or it doesn't look modern or current, I'm probably immediately going to be like, oh, she's outdated or, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah. Okay. I could go down a rabbit trail and I want to be considerate of your time. Last little tip I want to pull out from our conversations is I jotted down, just tell them versus what I want to tell you.
Yes.
In sales copy. So Emily, does it drive you knocking futs when people go, what I want to tell you is what you need to know is, and what you need to reflect on. And let me remind you what I just told you. And then you realize they didn't tell you nothing.
Yes. Yes, like, it does.
Very flowery, very pretty. But so what, when mm-hmm. just tell them in copy.
Right. Same so moment. I think a lot of this comes from confidence. When you're not writing with confidence, when you don't feel completely bought into the benefit or the value of what you're offering, we tend to over-explain, right? And we try to make up for our confidence with a lot of extra words. It just happens. It happens to the best of us. I have to edit myself for this. If I see myself over-explaining, I'm typically, that's a sign to me that like, you may need to check in about what you're offering here, right? Do you really believe that the value and the transformation you're promising is there? Because you're using a lot of words. But yeah, like stop telling people, here's the thing I want you to know. Here's what I want you to know. I'm going to tell you about this awesome offer. Just say, this offer does this, right? Here's the transformation, right? Like the transformation is X to Y, whatever it is. Being really, really direct is going to save you. People aren't going to read through a bunch of nonsense. They're just not. Yeah. And I think it just speaks to a lack of confidence at the end of the day.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I wish everyone could have experienced the pop-up conversations. I did record and publicly share the Monday group. Mm-hmm. I'm going to link to that from our show notes in case anybody wants to just be a little bird on the wall, to know to just experience, the conversation that we had and see what it's like. Emily, you have, so brand voice, you talk a lot about not falling for a bunch of copywriting rules and trying to create cookie cutter sales copy. You talk about finding your own authentic brand voice.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a free guide I'm going to link to in the show notes. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So I think even this is a helpful guide, even if you've been in business, actually, maybe especially if you've been in business for a while. I think a lot of us don't slow down and really intentionally consider our brand voice. But it's really, that's how you communicate, right? So you have this set of values, this set of personality traits, this way you want to show up in the world. And your brand voice is how you actually communicate with your audience, with the people that are around you. And what happens a lot of times is we have this idea, right? Oh, I'm going to have this like bubbly, friendly brand voice. And then we just default to a very standard, generic, like kind of professional, vanilla, like nothing super special voice when we're writing emails, when we're writing social media captions, when we're writing sales copy. I mean, it happens to all of us. So the brand voice guide is really just a fun little exercise that walks you through a few questions, a few like thinking, you know, provokes a few, helps you dive a little deeper into how you want to show up and helps you really assign some meaningful, intentional adjectives to that brand voice. Because when you know it and you can identify it, then you can check and see what you're writing and say, is this brand voice what I want it to be? You know, I said I wanted to be direct and professional, but when I read this, does it sound flimsy and, you know, flouncy and like, I don't know, flowery? You can compare. So your brand voice is whatever. There's no right brand voice. There's no right way to be. But I think being able to identify it and know what you want your voice to be will help you actually implement it and show up the way you want to be showing up. So that's what that guide is about.
So you sell courses on website copy, email marketing, sales pages, and you're still hireable as a copywriter?
I am. Yes. So I have a digital shop where it's a lot of just, if you are really into like doing things yourself, if you have great copy skills and you maybe just need a little direction on like, how should this be laid out? What should actually be included here? Right. I think there's a lot of people who absolutely can and should be writing their own copy. And so the shop is really just to help you do that in the most professional, quickest way. And then for a lot of people that either don't want to write their own copy or shouldn't be writing their own copy, because that is also something, I work with clients on project days. So essentially, it's very customizable. It's all done in like a VIP day or series of days, depending on the size of the project. And we work together and it's all done for you. So that's sales pages, sales email sequences, welcome sequences, that kind of thing.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. All of that at emilywriteswell.com. And listeners, come on back to the website, lovepeoplemakemoney.com. You'll find the show notes where I link to the brand voice guide and the link to one of the mastermind calls Emily participated in. And you can comment. And
yeah, check out that conversation. It really was good. It was very, your mastermind community is just full of like, I was obsessed. I loved everyone. It was very fun. But it's a really good conversation. So
there's magic in masterminds, absolute magic. Thank you for being part of mine.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Listeners, thanks so much for spending time with us. I'll see you in the next episode. Go love people and make money.